Radio Prague News.
Police have arrested five people in connection with the Promopro case, in which 135 million crowns were allegedly embezzled during the country's 2009 EU presidency. Current Defense Minister Alexander Vondra, who oversaw the Promopro project, has said he sees no reason to resign in light of the arrests. And the controversial MP Jaroslav Škarka, who is currently on trial for alleged corruption, is to head a parliamentary committee that will investigate the Supreme Audit Office's management. Police have arrested five people in an ongoing investigation of the Promopro case, in which at least 135 million crowns were embezzled during the country's EU presidency in 2009, the news website E15 reported on Wednesday, citing confidential sources. Among those arrested is Jaroslav Veselý, the owner of the Promopro company, which provided audiovisual and interpreting services to the Czech government, as well as several of the firm's subcontractors. They face charges of embezzlement and money laundering, along with four other people who have not been taken into custody. The case might have political implications, as the Promopro deal was overseen by then EU Affairs Minister and the current Defense Minister Alexander Vondra. Of the Civic Democrats who in the past faced pressure to resign over the scandal. In related news, Defense Minister Alexander Vondra has commented on the arrests, stating that he does not see a reason to resign in light of the ongoing investigation. He added that it was up to the courts to determine who would be charged for embezzling in connection with the case. The opposition has called on the minister to resign over the scandal. MP Jaroslav Škarka, who is currently on trial for alleged corruption with a ruling expected Friday, will be heading a parliamentary committee in charge of investigating the management of the country's Supreme Audit Office. The website Czech Position reported on Thursday that the controversial MP would be in charge of the committee. Mr. Škarka has refused to comment on press inquiries into whether he would be resigning from his office if he is found guilty on Friday. Jaroslav Škarka is being tried for accepting a bribe from public affairs de facto leader Vít Bárta. The trial has been receiving a lot of media attention. Czechs' eating habits have been changing in recent years as a result of multiple factors, including the cost of foods, advertising, and an increase in public awareness of healthy nutrition. While many Czechs continue to choose foodstuffs according to their price, those with higher incomes are increasingly paying attention to good quality and prefer healthy foods. Nutritionists say that economically weak families tend to choose cheaper groceries, which can have a negative impact on their health. According to data from the Czech Statistical Office, the consumption of bread in the country is on the decline, while pasta, rice, and potatoes have been growing more popular. And now let's take a brief look at the weather. The coming days bring overcast and rainy weather. Daytime highs should range between only 10 and 14 degrees Celsius. My name is Sarah Barufka, and this brings us to the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Christian Falvey. Many thanks for tuning in. Today, last week's government crisis leads to a rethink of austerity measures. After that, we'll be speaking with the head of the Prague Writers' Festival, Michael March. And in today's feature panorama, we talk to the Czech type designer who is taking on the Gujarati writing system used by 60 million people. I hope you'll be staying with us today for all that and more here on Radio Prague. The government on Wednesday approved far-reaching austerity plans to gradually lower the gap in public finances to well below 3% of the GDP. The strategy combines savings and tax hikes that are expected to impact all strata of society. Daniela Lazarova asked economic analyst David Marek whether such extensive austerity measures were called for and who would bear the brunt of the fiscal reform.
And the Czech government succeeded in the last 2 years to decrease budget deficit significantly. The budget deficit was almost 6% GDP 2 years ago. Last year, it was only marginally above 3% of GDP. But this budget deficit is still too high for the long-term development of the Czech economy. So it's still unsustainable in a long-term view. So the Czech government has to go on with fiscal consolidation, and proposed measures are unavoidable.
But what will the proposed measures do to growth? Now growth is around 0%.
The Czech economy has one significant feature. It's a small open economy. So fiscal policy has a relatively small impact on GDP. Respectively, its impact of fiscal policy is offset by net exports. I would say that negative fiscal impulse from proposed measures would be very limited for GDP growth.
Now, the government says it has distributed the fiscal measures fairly evenly across the board so that all groups of society bear the burden of these reforms. Who, in your opinion, will bear the brunt of this fiscal reform?
There are lots of measures proposed, and almost everybody would be affected by fiscal consolidation. However, one group of population could be severely affected. It's old people, because pensions would increase significantly less in the coming years than proposed before, and there is a threat that it can be the increase in pensions could be even smaller than increase in inflation. So real value of pensions could diminish in years to come.
Now, obviously, the gap in public finances needs to be reduced under 3% of GDP, but the plan is for the gap to be reduced to 1.9 in 2014. Are we not holier than the Pope here?
I would say that's a reasonable goal, because even 1.9% of GDP is still too much for Czech economy and its long-term sustainability. We are not in a situation like Spain or Portugal or Italy. We don't need to hurry with fiscal consolidation, but we can show some progress because financial markets can't tolerate such big deficits like 3% forever.
Is raising taxes the best way to go about it? There are some analysts who say that there's still a lot of money being squandered in the public sector. Do you feel that this was a wise decision?
I would say that the scope of necessary fiscal consolidation is so big that we can't rely only on expenditure cuts or raising taxes. We need to combine both of them. But on the other hand, higher taxes can diminish incentives for the government to look for additional savings, for additional expenditure cuts. And I would say that administration costs of public sector in the Czech Republic are still too high, and there's still significant scope for savings.
That was economic analyst David Marek talking to Daniela Lazarová. This is Radio Prague. On Saturday, the 22nd edition of the prestigious Prague Writers Festival kicks off in the Czech capital under the theme of Only the Future Exists. For 5 days, visitors will have the opportunity to attend readings, discussion panels, and film screenings featuring writers from around the world. As every year, the festival brings writers of international caliber to the city, with the British novelist and screenwriter Hanif Qureshi probably the most famous guest this year. Sarah Borufka spoke to the festival's director, Michael March, about the guests, the mission, and the theme of the festival.
Well, if it didn't exist, we'd be in trouble. Only the future exists. Only those living face the future. And the future's a tremendous abstraction, the abstractions of all abstractions, the future. But the question is, why is the future now so poor? Why is it so gray? It used to be bright. It used to be sunny. What really changed? And we want to try to analyze that. What has changed in the society? What has transformed the society for us to see the future in negative terms?
And people always very much look forward to the interesting international guests that the Prague Writers Festival brings to this beautiful city. Maybe you could give our listeners a short preview of who are the guests this year.
The guests are Jan-Erik Vold, this very mysterious guest. He's brought the 60s to Norway, performs with jazz musicians. He performed in Paris with Chet Baker. And he's going to have three musicians with him. So it will be a tremendous performance at the Prague Crossroads, with also the great American sort of shamanistic poet Jerome Rothenberg, who sort of lived on Seneca reservations. He's done virtually everything, and he'll do it as well in Prague. Then we have, of course, Hanif Qureshi. People are very familiar with his screenplays, with his work. He'll be in a conversation, The Future of Islam. He's written pieces called Sex and Secularity. It should be very, very exciting because we have Hamdi El-Ghazal from Egypt, a very young Egyptian novelist who's actually a follower of Gandhi. And we have Gündüz Vassav to moderate this conversation, a highly intellectual, highly popular Turkish author, psychologist. He started, in fact, Amnesty International in Turkey.
That sounds really interesting. And so my last question for you would be, the Prague Writers Festival, of course, has existed since 1991. That is an incredibly long time for any festival to be around. And I believe your mission must have changed over the years. Can you talk a bit about where the festival is right now?
1991 was the future. The festival is, in a sense, getting old, getting mature, in a sense. People are recognizing the festival as a festival of ideas, and perhaps ideas are becoming a bit more necessary than they were even in 1991, because the society has less shine. There's a great deal of damage. There's a great deal of sort of speculation. We need ideas to help us thinking through these times to get to the future. Of course, Churchill said, after Dunkirk, he said, well, an elegant retreat is not a victory. The present seems a retreat rather than going towards something new, the future.
Director of the Prague Writers Festival, Michael March, there talking to Sarah Barufka. If you're just tuning in, then thank you for joining us. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Christian Falvey. Type design is an ancient art enjoying a renaissance in the computer age. The specificities of writing systems that were once passed down from master to apprentice can now be worked with by designers anywhere in the world who have the patience and the talent to take on a foreign script. One such designer is David Brezina, one of the founders of the Brno type foundry Rosetta. In 2008, his Scholar type family received international recognition, and he is now working on a font for the Gujarati writing system, used by over 60 million people in the Indian subcontinent. When he came to our studio recently, I asked him how he became interested in type design in the first place.
It just came gradually. I think some 10, 7 years ago, I started realizing that there must be some people designing these things. And I started looking into it, and then I just started doing it in order to learn about it, and then I realized, hey, I like doing this. Let's do it a little more. I wasn't fascinated by letter forms in my childhood, nothing like that. It just came a bit late, I guess. So I like playing with curves, because when you draw letters, you need to draw really nice, smooth curves, and it's like sort of meditation. So that's what I think I like most about type design.
And you also teach typography.
Yes.
It's such a subtle art. You know, a letter is a letter, and it's only these very tiny differences that make all the difference in between different fonts. There's so much feeling involved in that. How do you teach it to other people?
I guess you need to have a special mindset to become a type designer. You need to have attention to detail, but also the ability to look from distance at the thing, if what you have done actually matters, sort of keeping the big picture. And these things you cannot really teach. You can point the students toward this, but you cannot really teach them. What I try to do is I try to help students make it work, make the typefaces look consistent, have a sort of good functional qualities, but the rest is like up to them.
Maybe one thing that probably a lot of people don't appreciate about your work, that it's not just sitting down and making something that's appealing to you and to your customer, but it involves a tremendous amount of research a lot of the time, I assume. Mm. You've already done several scripts in languages which I assume you don't speak, like Greek or Armenian.
Yes.
This work takes a great deal of research. Yeah. What does that involve?
Specifically, yes.
I assume you don't have to learn the language itself, but you do have to do a lot of work understanding the system, especially yes. with something like Gujarati.
Mm, yeah. What you need to do is expose yourself to as much material as possible, as well as historical, I don't know, such as manuscripts or first prints and then all the lineup. And then to contemporary stuff as well. So you need to look in newspapers, books, what typefaces they use, how they work, and so on. And then you need to learn a lot about the writing system itself, which is, in case of Gujarati, quite a challenge because it's a syllabic system. So you need to learn how the syllables are formed, how they connect, and so on.
And there's many, many dozens of them. In Gujarati, many dozens of characters.
I think I will need to design like 200, 500, something like that, of glyphs or characters.
And they have to fit together in every conceivable working order. So that seems almost like an impossible task when you don't speak the language yourself.
Well, that's one advantage you probably can get from the language, that you can predict the combinations, which are meaningful and which are not. But it's not so difficult to figure out without knowing the language. You can run some statistics, or you can ask some people who can read the language and print them some samples, and they would point out, hey, this is not working, this is working. And also you can kind of predict what can happen.
The Gujarati language isn't the only language that uses the Gujarati script. Is that right?
I think there are some minor languages which use it, but Gujarati is the dominant one.
And do you have to take them into consideration as well?
Yes. Well, this is more interesting for Devanagari, which is used for Hindi, Marathi, Nepali, and Sanskrit, where if you want to, and some more languages, if you want to support, say, Marathi, you ought to add few more characters in order to make it work, or consider different combinations and so on.
And so why Gujarati? Why did you decide to get it, to begin working on a script for that system?
I think it's simply I like it on a very superficial level. It's much simpler than Devanagari, and it's one of the easiest scripts from the Indian subcontinent. I don't know, Bengali and Tamil, they are much more visually complex, and they seem to me too difficult to start with. So I thought, well, this is nice. And then I realized that I actually like it very much, because it's a really good script. It's difficult to explain, but when you work with some other scripts, you realize, with some other Indian scripts, you realize that they carry so much of a legacy, and it seems like this is so not practical. Why don't do it a different way? And then you realize that, hey, Gujarati is doing it a different way, and it was a good choice at some point in the history to do it that way. So,
and is it not daunting to try to imagine what 60 million potential users of this script might like? Because obviously, even through all your research, you can't know everything that they're used to.
Mm. There are two aspects of it. I try not to think about it too much. And I'm not enforcing this particular font. I'm not enforcing. If they like it, they come and they buy it. So that's good. And the other aspect is there are so few good Gujarati typefaces that doing anything new is a good step. So it's extending, let's say, the typographic language of the script. So I think it's really important to try, at least. And there is not enough knowledge in Gujarat itself about the script. And in a sense, they don't know much about type design for their own script. This may sound a bit, arrogant from me to say, but there really needs to be a discussion about it and maybe some governmental incentives towards the script. Otherwise, it will look as bad as it looks today.
In your research into Gujarati and other languages like Greek and languages that use Cyrillic, what is that depth of exploration of different writing systems brought you personally? I mean, in Czech they say the more languages you speak, the more you are of a man. This is, would be similar, I would expect.
There is something about it. It helped me to rethink my view of type design. I wouldn't be perhaps so rigid about my Latin designs. Yeah, and about the methodology, it's certainly really helpful, and it's good inspiration. In a way, I borrowed something from Gujarati into my Italic. It's very hidden, invisible, but there is something about it that I designed the Italic for my Latin design after I played with Gujarati, and then I carried it back. So in this sense, yes, it's quite fun. And it's very useful when you are explaining students things about type design. Thanks to the fact that I know more scripts, I can be, let's say, more careful, or I could put it in a way that they wouldn't end up being just Latin designers. They would easily transfer their skills towards some other script.
It makes me wonder, is there a kind of globalization of writing systems occurring at a very slow rate through this kind of multicultural, multilinguistic designing?
It's very tricky. You need to be super careful when you're designing, say, for Devanagari. You need to be careful about not bringing your Latin preconceptions into it. But it can be done. You can educate yourself about the script, and you can learn, okay, they don't have a concept of serif, they don't have this idea of some specific terminals and some features, and it aligns from top to bottom, not from bottom to top, and things like that. But you would still hear people saying, hey, you're a foreigner, you're sort of influencing other script. But then you notice that especially in India, what is happening is that the dominant language, that is Hindi, and writing system is Devanagari, is influencing the other scripts. So particularly in Gujarati, you can see that the Indian designers, maybe even Gujarati designers, are borrowing shapes from the other script. So there is like a sometimes great mixture of things. So yeah, you need to be careful, but they are kind of used to it. To this blending. I don't think it's right. I think it shouldn't happen on an individual basis. You know, the one designer can spoil everything, so it takes a great responsibility. But it is happening. So,
do you feel the sky's the limit, and you could work even on Korean or Japanese type fonts, or something's impossible?
These things. I'm not sure about Korean, but Japanese and Chinese, these things are typically team projects. And I said to myself, look, do just few things right instead of exploring the whole world. So I think at some point I will start either collaborating with people, which in fact I already started with the Devanagari, or I will just not go into that area. It's crazy. Such an amount of work.
That was type designer David Brezina ending that edition of Panorama. Topping off our show now for today is the next edition of our language learning series, The ABCs of Czech, brought to you by Pavla Horáková.
welcome to another episode in our short series on wild flora idioms, which closes the whole nature cycle. Today we'll focus on trees.
Stromy.
We have already talked about fruit trees and their place in the Czech language, but now it's time to look at some other trees. Generally speaking, trees in the language stand for good qualities, strength, height, and firmness. And the expressions usually refer to young men.
Urostlý jako bříza.
Built like a birch tree, or
urostlý jako jedle.
Like a fir tree. Tall and slim men can be likened to poplars.
Štíhlý a urostlý jako topol.
Slim and well built like a poplar. A man can also be
zdravý jako dub.
As healthy as an oak tree, or equally strong.
Silný jako dub.
Or he can have a head made of oak.
Dubová hlava.
Which either means stubborn or not too bright. The beech,
buk,
is also a common tree in the Czech Republic, and because it rhymes with the word
kluk,
boy, the Czechs coined the expression
kluk jako buk,
a boy like a beech tree, meaning a healthy and good-looking boy. A typical situation in which to use this phrase is when a baby boy is born.
Je to kluk jako buk.
The rhyming principle is also behind the saying
vedle jak ta jedle,
to be wide of the mark as a fir tree. We've already mentioned the oak as a symbol of stubbornness and dumbness to a certain extent. Here is another example.
Je to jako mluvit do dubu.
It's like talking to an oak. Or in proper English, it's like talking to a brick wall. On the other hand,
mluvit do duté vrby,
to talk to a hollow willow tree, means to confide your deepest secrets to someone as if the person were a hollow tree.
Dělat někomu vrbu
is to be someone's confidant. And here's another expression with the word
vrba,
a willow tree.
Malovat straky na vrbě.
To paint magpies on willow trees means to fob somebody off with empty promises. And to close our lesson about trees, the expression tree of life is the same in Czech.
Strom života.
Whereas the family tree is
rodokmen,
or a family trunk or log. And that's all for today, I'm afraid. Join us next time if you can for more Czech idioms about wild flora. Until then,
naschledanou.
That was Pavla Horáková with the ABCs of Czech, wrapping up Radio Prague's English program for today. Don't forget that this program and every other is available at our internet address, radio.cz. If you have any questions or comments, we are always happy to hear from you. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz, on Facebook or Twitter under Radio Prague, or of course by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening.